So hello to anyone who's listening. The website has been live now for a little over 3 weeks, and we've already had well over 1,000 people from different parts of the world logging in. I want to thank those who have passed on their words of appreciation for what it is we're offering here. I also want to thank Marcus Fellows for his abilities in establishing this website and making this offering possible. It's my intention at this time to respond to any questions that might come through once a month in a talk, so this will be the first response to the questions that have come through in the last 3 weeks. I'll simply respond to them in the order in which they were sent in. Often the answers to these questions will overlap each other. I won't attempt to combine all the questions in one particular response. So, first question, someone has written in saying or asking, is saying yes to what comes enough, or does one need to actively seek to connect with what one thinks one needs? Generally, I do not have an interest or desire in accumulating or having more than I experience now, but it seems as if I do not work for things, I will not sustain a reasonable level of life. I feel compromised by having to make an income and hate thinking that I will be imprisoned by a regular job. I say yes to what comes, and so far it has been enough, but I am afraid that I have been lucky so far, and my luck will run out. Is yes enough? Because I do not have any desire to make my life happen beyond yes. So the question is saying yes to life enough? And the answer is yes. But you really have to be very careful with saying yes, because you have to really comprehend what it is you're saying yes to. When you truly say yes to life, you're saying yes not because you're willingly saying yes in order to get some kind of reward. You're saying yes because you have finally realized that you have no alternative. Ultimately, we have never influenced our lives. We are expressions of nature. The very happening of our being is not our doing. We do not create our body or our brain. We don't create our needs. We don't create our interests. We don't create our concerns. We don't create our abilities or our lack of abilities. We don't create any of those things. So ultimately, we don't create our movement through existence. Everything that we apparently experience, everything that we apparently do, is actually the expression of nature, and it is compelled by the particular needs, interests, concerns, abilities, lack of abilities, the particular body and brain that nature is expressing in any particular moment. So, if a teacher of this perspective says anything about saying yes to life, that yes can only come from seeing very clearly that you have no choice in this matter. You don't have a choice of saying yes or no to life. Whether you say yes or no is the expression of nature. It's not your doing. Saying yes comes about when you realize that none of what you are is your doing, that what we apparently are is the expression of nature and never has been anything else. you can't really say yes, but I don't want to have a job. So if we look at the Buddha's life or Christ's life or the life of any particular spirit, so-called spiritual teacher, they didn't say yes, but. They didn't say yes, I'm saying yes to life, but I want life to go in a particular direction. And I will only say yes if life goes in a particular direction. So, for instance, Christ was ridiculed, tortured, and died nailed to a cross. So when he said yes to God's being, when he said yes to being an expression of God, he didn't say, yes, but I don't want to be ridiculed, tortured, and dying and die nailed to a cross. And in the same way, the Buddha had a bad back. Often the pain in his back was so extreme that he couldn't finish one of his teachings, and he would let one of the other monks finish that teaching because the physical pain of his back was too much to take. So he would lie down behind the monk that would finish the teaching. He also had great difficulties with his family, very bad family relations. He had a cousin who tried to kill him repeatedly. The Buddha often experienced periods of famine where he had nothing to eat but horse bran. And ultimately, he died of food poisoning after weeks and weeks of vomiting and diarrhea. So when the Buddha said yes to life, when there was this open-hearted acknowledgement of this mysterious movement of existence, he didn't say, yes, but I don't want the backache, I don't want the bad family relations, I don't want the famine, I don't want my cousin trying to kill me, and I don't want to die of food poisoning after weeks of vomiting and diarrhea. Saying yes to life is the simple acknowledgement that all of existence will play out in whatever way it plays out. Nobody has any ultimate influence over that. Nobody has any influence over that. All of us are an expression of that mysterious, inexplicable event, or this mysterious, inexplicable event that existence is. This isn't a situation where if we say yes in a wholehearted manner, life is going to flow smoothly and it will move in a pleasant way, and it will ultimately move towards some great reward that we might want. The whole situation of enlightenment or realization is often expressed in a very sloppy manner. No human being is ever going to come to realization. No human being is ever going to awaken, because there isn't any human being here in the first place, and that's the realization. The situation is this: a totally inexplicable, formless happening that is simply happening somehow thinks that it's a person living in a world. It somehow thinks that it's a person separate from the rest of existence, and somehow that this person is directing its movement through life. The awakening is simply the realization that that storyline is incorrect, and what remains is what has always been: a totally inexplicable happening, a totally formless happening, simply happening, and it will play out in whatever way it plays out. I know that certain teachers will give the impression that somehow the universe will simply take care of us, that we'll have to make no effort whatsoever, and the universe will take care of us, and ultimately that's true. But what people don't realize is that without making any effort, you will be given hunger. And the survival mechanism that exists in the whole process of existence will compel you to go out and find food. So without making any effort whatsoever, you will be compelled to go find food in most cases. Occasionally, you will have an individual who doesn't ultimately care about their particular existence or their apparent survival. And so they might be willing to simply sit and let themselves waste away. However, in most cases, most apparent cases, that's not what's going to happen. If you need to work, you will, or the universe will graciously offer you the urge to go find a job in order to make money, in order to buy food, in order to get shelter, in order to get clothes. So it's true, the universe will take care of you. But that doesn't mean you won't have a job. Each of us is a unique expression of existence. And each of us has an apparent unique set of circumstances. Some so-called awakened beings are married, some are single, some are wealthy, some are poor, some work, some don't work. Each and every one of us is a unique expression of existence, and it will play out in whatever way it plays out. We don't get to say, yes, I'm open to however it plays out, but I want it to play out in a certain way. Or I guess we could say that, but I can pretty much guarantee it's not going to work out the way you want it to. And if you're saying I want it to work out a certain way, you're really not saying yes to the universe and its miraculous expression. Again, saying yes is not a matter of choice. Saying yes to the universe and its unfolding can only truly come from seeing that there's no option. Existence will play out in whatever way it's going to play out. Whether you willingly say yes to that or not, it's going to play out in whatever way it plays out. Someone else has written in, I found your website from a post on Facebook from Seeker's Corner. I like the way you bring simplicity to the non-dual teachings. I've looked into non-duality now for the past 7 years, and before that, 25 years of transcendental meditation. But in spite of that, I'm still seeking. Any advice or help will be greatly appreciated. So let's see, 25 and 7, 32 years of apparent seeking. Well, the first thing that strikes me is that in those 32 years of seeking, you will probably have felt that you've come upon some great realization from time to time. And I think perhaps the most important thing to notice is that it always fades. Whatever great realization you feel that you're having in any particular moment, the intensity of that realization fades. Whatever it feels as though you've arrived at or come to, that fades away, that moves, that shifts, that changes, so that it doesn't feel as though you've ever arrived anywhere at all. More often than not, within these realms of spiritual seeking, there is a general impression that we're going to arrive somewhere, we're going to arrive at some particular understanding, or at some particular pleasure, or at some particular sense of self, or at some particular control mechanism, a system, a method, or a technique, that somehow is going to feel as though we've arrived at completion, that we've arrived at an ultimate understanding, we've arrived at some ultimate pleasure that life can offer, or we've arrived at some ultimate place of wholeness, and flat out, there is no arriving anywhere in the process of life. At some point, there's simply the realization that life itself is a formless event, so it will always have the impression that it's moving on to another appearance or another set of circumstances, because that's all that actually exists, is a flowing, a motion, an action, a streaming, a formlessness, simply presenting itself. The most direct, well, I can't even say the most direct approach to this. So let me rephrase that. If you simply sit down and make no effort to do anything at all, just sit. And simply begin to notice that sounds are coming and going, the breath is coming and going, thoughts are coming and going, moods are coming and going, the heart is beating, if you've just eaten, food is digesting, your blood is flowing through your body. The whole biological system that you are, the apparently biological system that you are, is simply functioning. This moment is presenting itself. Begin to notice the fact that absolutely everything in this moment is changing in some way. And with those apparent things that don't seem to be changing, really give it some consideration. That is it that they're not changing, or is it that they seem to be changing very slowly? And in this simple acknowledgement of the moment, you may come to realize that this is all there ever is, a happening that has no particular form. If we, for a moment, simply rest with the fullness of this moment, rather than having a tight focus on the world of thought, if we begin to notice what we usually consider to be seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking, not those words, but the actual happening that gets pointed to with the words seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. If we notice this event, the breath coming and going, the moods coming and going, the sounds coming and going, thoughts coming and going, the heart beating, without any effort at all of this is presenting itself. This moment is presenting itself. This moment is presenting everything that you think you are. It's presenting what you consider to be your body and brain. It's presenting what you consider to be your needs, your interests, your concerns, your abilities, your lack of abilities. There's just this happening presenting itself. When we apparently came out of the womb, we didn't have a storyline for it. Now there's a storyline, but without any effort on anyone's part, that storyline presents itself. And this storyline is just a collection of sounds and symbols that we've apparently been trained to use. The storyline wasn't there when this great event first presented itself. So this is the realization that there is only this presentation, this happening, this flowing, this movement, this dance, this action, and it's simply presenting itself. There's no way of saying what it is. It has no particular form. You were an inch long in your mother's womb, apparently, and now you're, I'm assuming you're quite a bit longer at this moment. What made that happen? And whatever length you are now, at some point in the future, this apparent body is going to fade away to dust. What's making that happen? Now, there's no real answer to that, but there is simply the fact that it is changing, it is formless. Whatever thought you have in your head right now is automatically gone. It's moving on to something else. Whatever mood you're having now is automatically gone. It's already moved on in a subtle way to something else, and eventually it will seem to disappear totally. Whatever mood you had yesterday at breakfast is gone. Whatever mood you're having now is on its way to being gone. There is only this formless event. You cannot describe something that has no particular form. What are you going to call it? Are you going to say it's light? Well, just wait a while, it's going to be dark. Are you going to say it's clarity? Well, wait a while, it's going to seem like confusion. Is it happiness? Well, wait a while, it's going to seem like discomfort or maybe even unhappiness. Is it summer? Well, wait a while, it's going to be winter. Is it winter? Well, wait a while, it's going to be summer. You can't really describe it as anything in particular. Is it a planet Earth with people on it? Wait a while, maybe a long while, but wait a while. There won't be a planet with people on it. Whatever this appears to be will move on to something else, some other appearance. Existence is a happening that has no particular form. And if you rest and do absolutely nothing, it's quite a simple thing to notice that everything presents itself, and whatever it's presenting in this moment is moving on to some other appearance. That's all there is. There is no arriving at a particular understanding. Thought itself is a never-ending movement, always moving on to some other perspective. The particular storyline that's being presented isn't important. The fact that it's a movement, the fact that it has no form, is the important aspect here. A particular body isn't important as far as describing the universe. The fact that the body is a movement is the important factor here. A particular mood isn't important. The fact that that mood is moving on to something else, it has no particular form, is the important factor here, the important aspect here. The more we acknowledge this very simple fact of existence, the more it becomes apparent that that's all that has ever existed. Everything we are is simply the movement of this inexplicable formless happening presenting itself. It's playing out in whatever way it plays out. If it seems as though you're seeking, well, that's the expression of a totally formless, inexplicable event presenting itself. If it seems like you're discovering something, well, that's the expression of a totally formless, inexplicable event presenting itself. Never at any time is it somebody lost and seeking or somebody finding. It is always a totally formless, inexplicable happening presenting itself. Someone else has written in, "I've been reading your book Dismantling with much resonance. Today I got this message from the Science and Non-Duality Conference, folks. And in quotation marks, it's written, we have been recently inspired by the lifelong work of the physicist Julian Barber. He has written the book The End of Time, which advances timeless physics, the controversial view in science that time as we perceive it does not exist as anything other than an illusion, and that a number of problems in physical theory arise from assuming that it does exist. And so they quote Julian Barber, change merely creates an illusion of time, with each individual moment existing in its own right, complete and whole. It is all an illusion. There is no motion and no change. He argues that the illusion of time is what we interpret through what he calls time capsules, which are any fixed pattern that creates or encodes the appearance of motion, change, or history. And this person writes, I would like to hear your response to no motion and no change. And of course, it's very obvious why somebody would want me to comment on the idea of no motion and no change, because I'm forever prattling on about motion and change. This question is a great opportunity to acknowledge the absurdity of thought. So, if you would, I'll express this very slowly. So, if you would just give this some consideration. Pretty much all of us will eventually say that everything changes. Our so-called life experience leads us to this very basic impression of existence, that every apparent thing is changing. So, if all apparent things are constantly changing, that must mean that there are no things. It must mean that they are simply movement or change. Because if a so-called thing is constantly changing, it never becomes anything that could change. There is only the change or the movement. So if we say that all apparent things are constantly changing, we're actually saying that there are no things, there is no thingness, there is only movement or change. Now, constant movement, constant change, is simply the absence of form, the constant absence of form. To say that there is only movement is to say that there is a constant absence of form. You might say unform. So if there is only constant unform or a constant absence of form, then there is never anything that changes. It's always the absence of form. It's always constantly unform. If it's always constantly unform, then there never is any movement from one thing to another or one place to another. There never is any change. So, ultimately, to say that all apparent things are constantly changing is exactly the same as saying that there never is any change. To say that all apparent things are moving and shifting is to ultimately say that there is never any movement or shift. It is always simply the constant absence of form. And here we come to the absurdity of thought, the constant predicament of storylines, is that even when they're saying exactly the same thing, it seems as though they're saying two opposite things. That's what storylines do. Storylines can never tell us what's actually happening here, because it's quite possible to take exactly the same event and describe that event as carefully as we possibly can, and we end up with what seems to be two opposite viewpoints, when in actuality, it's saying exactly the same thing. Yet it still remains that it seems as though it's saying two opposite things. And so, within this whole apparent situation of so-called awakening, the storylines are never important. They can never really tell us what the happening of this moment is, because it can take exactly the same experience, exactly the same happening, and describe it as movement, or it can describe it as the constant absence of movement. And it seems like it's saying two opposite things, when actually it's saying exactly this. Those two descriptions are saying exactly the same thing. It's just gibberish. The whole field of thought begins to break down in a situation of describing movement or change. The practicality of it, the usefulness of it, starts to break down. It's only a useful tool in certain situations. It cannot ultimately tell us what existence is. So, when we come to this so-called awakening, descriptions are never ultimately important. They're simply pointing to an event that can't possibly be described in any way. Now, I'm not going to tell you that you shouldn't sit and debate the issue of whether existence is movement or the total absence of movement. I'm just pointing out that to say that all apparent things are moving and changing is exactly the same thing as saying there never is any movement or there never is any change. And if that's realized, there can be no debate in this area. The ultimate happening of existence cannot be described in terms of form, because it has no particular form. To say that it's movement is to give it some kind of form. To say that it is the absence of movement is to give it some kind of form. It has no form. It has no describable form. It's something that cannot be contained in thought. Thought is simply one of the mysterious expressions of existence. Within this realm of realization, within this realm of awakening, it's ultimately realized that thought really isn't very important at all. It's simply an expression of this greater mysterious event. We don't have to worry about describing it. If you made no attempt to describe a river, it would go on flowing. If you made no attempt to describe a storm, it would go on presenting itself appropriately. And in the same way, we don't have to really ultimately describe existence in any way at all, and it will continue to express itself quite fine. This whole process of thinking, that process itself is something that's totally inexplicable. It's not even something called description. It's not even something called thought. Ultimately, it's a totally inexplicable, formless event presenting itself. And within this realm of so-called awakening or realization, that's all that needs to be acknowledged. a totally inexplicable formless event presenting itself. The words will come and go as an expression of that event. Each and every one of us has an inclination to certain types of expression. If we look at the expression of nature, the expression of this great inexplicable event of existence, we find that absolutely every apparent expression is unique. No two snowflakes are the same, no two leaves are the same. And in the same way, each and every so-called individual is inclined to use words in a certain way. We all seem to be hoping to find some general agreement on the terms that we use, but actually, if each and every so-called individual is very honest with himself or herself, you will discover that each and every one of us has a unique way of expressing a description of life. And even if we come to agree on certain basic facts, the way we point to that fact or those facts is unique. So once again, within this realm of awakening or realization, when we point to this great inexplicable happening that existence is, one person wants to call it God. Another person wants to call it the flow of nature. Another person wants to call it the great spirit. Another person wants to call it the unformed ocean of existence. Another person wants to call it movement or motion. Another person wants to call it the absence of movement or the absence of motion. Someone else wants to call it formlessness, and someone else wants to call it unform. And some people just want to shut up and to and step out of the line of fire. But we don't get to decide what expression we're going to be. Whatever is meaningful to us, apparently meaningful to us, is simply offered by existence. It's simply offered by the flow of nature. The descriptions are never important. There's a great inexplicable dance, a great spirit, the great ocean of existence, a great movement, a great motion, a great absence of movement, a great unform, a great formlessness. That's all. It's just this happening, simply happening. Another person has written in asking if, in the language of my books, Dismantling the Fantasy and Essence, would I say that it is the unformed, and in brackets he has or she has the permanent perfect peace, that which never changes, is it the unformed that registers all the changes, and is the essence of, and is the unformed the essence of all that changes? They're asking if this particular phrasing might be useful. So would I say that the unformed is the permanent perfect peace, that which never changes, and it's, would I say that it's the unformed that registers all the changes and is the essence of all the changes? The answer to that is no. That's not what I would say. And I wouldn't particularly find that useful, but that's not to say that someone else shouldn't say that or that someone else wouldn't find that useful. My own apparent tendency is to simply point to the happening of existence. And I have a tendency to want to simply rest with that happening. I very quickly get tired of a variety of ways of describing it. The descriptions can only point to the event and at ultimately they become useless, really, because they're pointing to something that can't be described. And it's not necessary to describe it a lot of the time. If I'm in a conversation with someone, all kinds of descriptions may come up, all kinds of references may come up, and I will use the storylines that we normally use in order to point to the event of life, but ultimately I have absolutely no interest in describing existence in any kind of ultimate way. It can't be described in any kind of ultimate way. And the urge to describe it in any kind of ultimate way is incredibly frustrating, incredibly painful. And at this age, I just don't have the energy. I remember when I was living as a monk in England, and I would sometimes go visit Ajahn Sumedho in his room, and on the wall he would have, he had a picture of an old man sitting inside his little brick cottage on a rainy day, and he was sitting just inside the window looking out, and in his hand he held a cup of coffee. And I remember Ajahn Sumedho saying that for him this was the essence of meditation. It was really nothing more than just relaxing and watching the happening of existence, that nothing needed to be explained, nothing needed to be worked out. There's just the event of existence presenting itself. Everything we are is simply presented. Whatever words come out, come out, but they're not important. They're simply the movement or the non-movement of whatever this happening is. And it's happening all by itself. Once again, each of us will be expressed in a unique manner. So the apparent words that issue from our process will be unique ultimately. They may be very similar to someone else's expression, but they are ultimately unique. And to attempt to find some kind of general consensus will be incredibly frustrating, because once again, if we look at the expression of nature, we can't find any two leaves the same on any two trees. We can't find any two snowflakes the same. No two of us have the same breath rate, the same skin composition. The whole expression of a so-called human body is unique. It's unlike any other so-called human body that's being expressed. And in the same way, our own particular way of describing existence, and even our own particular way of pointing to this inexplicable happening that existence is, will be unique. Be very careful. Be very cautious about trying to find general consensus anywhere in this event. And finally, someone has written in saying, "Thanks for a wonderful book that I read in one go. Shortly after, I was playing with my 8-month-old son and experienced that my essence and his essence are one and the same. There is only ever the same thing or no thing, living everything. I had not really tried to figure anything out. This was very liberating for me, and life felt joyful and easy. After a while, the clarity faded. Probably the mind tried to understand this, and I was back in the usual contracted state we often find ourselves in. I then tried to read your book again, but now with the expectations and trying to grasp it, I became puzzled that you first said that everything is changing, and then you said nothing is even changing, because only form changes and there is no form. All there is unform. What can I do now? I obviously understood the message the first time. I keep feeling that even though there is no static form, there still is a form right now, this very moment. And my mind wants to know what unform really is. Is there anything you could shed some light on here? I'd be very grateful for it. So here we come to one of the really interesting aspects of what might be called a non-dual perspective or a non-dual teaching, in that if someone simply considers it, and there's a very clear pointing to the large event of existence, without any effort at all, there is often a literal experience of that so-called oneness. It actually isn't oneness, it's an undividedness. And it isn't even undividedness. Who knows what the heck it is? But if there is simply an innocent consideration of what our experience actually is, that the happening of this moment is simply one big happening, or an undivided happening. Again, these words are simply pointing to the event. And in an innocent consideration of this, there is often simply a very strong realization of that happening. And it may feel as though existence, the moment, is one big ocean moving and shifting. And at other times, it may feel as though we can barely connect with that sense of things, because both of these are the expression of this larger event. So the inexplicable happening that existence is, the inexplicable happening of this moment, will present itself as though it's a number of separate things, and that we are somehow separate from all the other things in the happening of this moment. And yet, at another apparent time, it will actually feel as though this is simply one big happening, one big ocean of movement. Perhaps one of the major things to realize is that you can never approach you can never acknowledge the large event of this moment by having an extremely tight focus on description or thinking, because thinking is only one small aspect of this moment. And so, in general, we have time and time again various teachers simply asking us to rest with the moment, to rest with the fullness of the moment. And we cannot do this with the idea that we're going to create a sense of oneness or create a sense of wholeness. It's simply sitting down, resting, and noticing that there is, first of all, this larger event. It's not just a bunch of thoughts. There's what we actually call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. So these mental activities. But it's not just the mental activities. And this larger event is not these words. It's not the words seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking. It's what those words point to. So you have this whole field event that you would call seeing. You have a whole field event that you call hearing. There's a whole field event that you would call touching or tactile sensations. There are pulsations and vibrations and waves of energy and a little twinge here and a little twinge there and growing pains and an automatic shift of the body. We have this so-called event of observing, but if we really acknowledge this event of observing, that too is an ever-shifting event. So one moment the so-called attention is wrapped up in storylines, and then there's a moment where we kind of snap out of a storyline, and immediately sounds present themselves, and seeing presents itself, and the physical sensations that we call the body present themselves and for a moment, and then it the so-called attention kind of gets lost in thought again. And so we have just this unformed event of the moment. And that is literally an unformed ocean, an undivided happening. So you can't acknowledge that with a tight focus on thinking. You can't acknowledge that by wanting it to be something in particular. In any particular moment, it is what it is. So, you know, this particular person has said that for a moment there was an experience of this essence of everything, that there is only the same thing or no thing living everything. There was this very strong impression of life being this great ocean, undivided ocean of existence. And then there was this sense of losing that, of this, of being contracted, of somehow losing it, but nothing was lost. The ocean of existence presents itself in one moment as though it is one great ocean of existence, and in the next moment it's automatically presenting itself as a sense of separation, a feeling of separation. Nothing's ever lost. Jiddu Krishnamurti used to say that, you know, it's a very strange situation because in one moment everything feels as though we're just being carried in the ocean of existence, and then in another moment it's as though that oceanic feeling is nothing more than a light breeze that barely touches the cheek and we can't somehow get a sense of it in any way at all. The fact of the matter is all of it is a totally inexplicable happening. So we're not looking for a constant oceanic feeling. We're simply acknowledging that in any particular moment there is a totally inexplicable happening presenting itself. If we want it to be something in particular, we're going to suffer because it's formless. It doesn't have a particular form. It's not always going to feel oceanic. If we think that it's supposed to have a particular feeling or a particular sensibility, we haven't acknowledged that it's truly formless. Even if it feels like you're isolated and alienated in this moment, and it's a gut-wrenching experience, and there's an intense feeling of loneliness, that itself is a mysterious, inexplicable, formless event, a formless happening presenting itself, and whatever it seems to be now is moving on to something else. Now, to this particular person who's asked this question, you know, how do I get this oceanic feeling back? Well, you can't get it back. You can't make that happen. But the mere fact that existence has presented this to you, and it's incredibly meaningful, that indicates that it will express it to you again at a certain point. And if for an apparent number of years you've been pulled in this direction, you don't have to worry about it. It's automatically moving in this direction. If you have acknowledged this inexplicable formless happening, the dance of this moment, if you have truly acknowledged that, that will not be forgotten. It can never be lost because it's all that actually is. If you make no effort at all, if you rest with this moment, there is just the full event of this moment. Whether it feels as though it's separated and it doesn't feel very dramatically whole, it's not important because it has many expressions. It is formless. If it's feeling very separated in this moment, doesn't matter. Whatever it feels like now is moving on to something else, and at some other moment it will feel oceanic. It will feel undivided. Often late at night, it will automatically express itself this way before we go to sleep, or very early in the morning when we're just awakening, it will very easily display itself in this way. But be careful about trying to hang on to that oceanic feeling, because who knows? Who knows what this inexplicable happening is going to present? It's inexplicable, it's formless, it's presenting itself. That's all that ever is. I don't know if my response to any of these questions will appear to be of any help to anyone, but it's all I can offer at this time. Often people will generally ask, you know, what can I do to move this along, to make this happen faster? There really isn't anything to make happen faster. Existence is always an inexplicable happening, an inexplicable formless happening presenting itself. And there's simply an ongoing acknowledgement of that. As I said earlier, this isn't a matter of a human being coming or arriving at a particular understanding or getting to a particular result or a particular point of arrival. There is a totally indefinable, formless happening, and for some reason it thinks that it has form. And the moment it starts believing that it has form, it labels those forms and it starts telling stories to itself, saying that, oh, I'm a person in a world and I'm on a life journey. But that's not what's happening. And at some point, it may be realized that there is no form. In everyone's so-called experience of existence, the experience is that everything is changing. If you sit down and make no effort at all, in this moment, the breath comes and goes, the heart beats, the moods come and go, the sounds come and go, the body ages, the blood flows, the food digests. All of this movement takes place. The simple happening of existence, the flow of nature. Everything, I mean, some will just say everything moves to the laws of nature. The planet turns, the sun moves through the sky, the seasons change, the breath comes and goes, the heart beats, the food digests, the body ages. Our particular interests, our particular needs, our particular concerns present themselves. This apparent body and mind simply happens. An apparent life journey takes place. But through all of that apparent happening, it is simply a totally indescribable, inexplicable, indefinable event presenting itself. If one is interested in exploring the event of existence, then simply rest with it from time to time. Let it express itself. If you're interested in what might be known as a non-dual perspective, then simply read the clearest expressions, the expressions that seem most clear to you. Perhaps as a general rule, we might realize that it doesn't have to be complicated. If the expression is incredibly complicated, well, it could be suspect. There is just the simple happening of this moment. There's never anything to ultimately understand. There's never anything to ultimately arrive at. Whatever seems to be appearing is simply on its way to another expression, and all of that is happening on its own. We do not exist as anything apart from that happening. we do not direct nature, we're an expression of nature. If you're interested, you might consider this. When we look at nature in general, we don't have the impression that a rock is deciding its career as a rock. We don't have the feeling that a squirrel is deciding its career as a squirrel. We don't have the impression that a storm is directing its expression as a storm. Whatever we see in nature, we generally have the impression that it's being expressed by the laws of nature, the laws of the universe. Somehow we have the impression that we're directing existence. Everything else is an expression of nature, but somehow we're in charge. And to me, that's a very odd notion. We wouldn't go into an incredibly beautiful forest and have the feeling that any of the elements of that forest are directing their existence. So we wouldn't feel that the mighty cedars or the giant redwoods have decided to be mighty cedars or giant redwoods. We wouldn't have the impression that a shrub has decided to be a shrub. We wouldn't have the impression that a beetle has decided to be a beetle. And that if it had made a little more effort, it could have been a butterfly. Instead, we see everything to be a unique and fascinating expression of nature. And that's generally how we see existence. Everything is a unique and fascinating expression of the laws of the universe, the laws of nature. It's the movement of nature itself. One great, inexplicable happening. A cosmos. The word cosmos generally means one great system. So we generally have the impression that everything is an expression of that one great event, that undivided flow of nature. Everything except one thing, us. For some reason, we have the impression that we're responsible for what we are, and yet there isn't one of us who would say that we've created our body or our brain. We would not say that we've created our needs, our interests, our concerns. We would not say that we have created our abilities and our lack of abilities. And yet almost every one of us will say that somehow we're in charge of our existence. And yet our functioning is totally dependent on the body and brain that we are. It's totally dependent on the needs, the interests, and the concerns, the abilities, and the lack of abilities that we are. We will all say that we did not create these, and yet almost all of us will say that we're in charge of our expression in existence. There's something very odd in that. And I feel it's worth looking at that. If you set aside some time and simply rest, you may realize that without any effort on your part, the whole process that you are presents itself. The body and brain, the needs, the interests, the concerns, the thoughts, the moods, the breath coming and going, the heart beating, what we call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking simply presents itself. There is simply this great event. We aren't making any bad life decisions any more than a storm is making a bad life decision. We do not exist as anything apart from the expression of nature. If it makes you feel better to call it the Great Spirit, or the Ocean of Existence, or the Tao, or Atman, or Yahweh, or the river of life, or the dance of the cosmos, or movement, or unform, or formlessness, then by all means call it whatever you want to call it. As always, whatever I've offered here tonight is simply for your consideration. I'm not asking you to believe it. It's simply for your consideration. I'm simply asking you to notice what your actual experience is, if you're interested. If you're not interested, it's not important. This perspective has no importance to anyone other than those who find it important. This perspective is simply one of the many apparent expressions of nature, and the gathering of apparent people around this apparent perspective has no more importance than the gathering of robins with robins and crows with crows. It's simply one of the many apparent expressions of existence.